Thanks for listening to our podcast. We invite you to check out additional resources for this message at probe.org/podcast.
There's an Austrian economist who lived through World War II who has much to say to us. Kirby Anderson introduces you to Friedrich Hayek, now on Probe.
A few years ago, if you said the name Friedrich Hayek to the average person in society, they wouldn't know his name. They might wrongly guess that he was the father of actress Selma Hayek. His name was unknown to non-economists. Today, he has much more visibility. People are reading his classic book, The Road to Serfdom, perhaps in order to make sense of our troubled economic climate and the current administration's policies. When TV host Glenn Beck talked about Hayek and The Road to Serfdom, the book went to number one on Amazon and stayed at the top 10 for some time. A rap video featuring cartoon versions of Hayek and John Maynard Keynes has been viewed over a million times on YouTube. Why all the interest in a Vienna-born, Nobel Prize-winning economist who passed off the scene some time ago? Well, people are taking a second look at Hayek because of our current economic problems. Russ Roberts, in his op-ed, Why Friedrich Hayek is Making a Comeback, says people are reconsidering four ideas Hayek championed. First, Hayek and his fellow Austrian school economists such as Ludwig von Mises argued that the economy is much more complicated than the simple economic principles set forth by Keynes. Boosting aggregate demand by funding certain sectors with a stimulus package of the economy won't necessarily help any other sector of the economy. Second, Hayek highlighted the role of the Federal Reserve in the business cycle. The artificially low interest rates set by the Fed played a crucial role in inflating the housing bubble. Our current monetary policy seems to merely be postponing the economic adjustments that must take place to heal the housing market. Third, Hayek argued in his book that political freedom and economic freedom are connected and intertwined. The government in a centrally controlled economy controls more than just wages and prices. It inevitably infringes on what we do and where we live. A final point by Hayek is that order can emerge not just from top down, but also from bottom up. At the moment, citizens in many of the modern democracies are suffering from a top-down fatigue. A free market not only generates order, but the freedom to work and trade with others. The opposite of a top-down collectivism is not selfishness, but cooperation. Although The Road to Serfdom was written at the end of World War II to warn England that it could fall into the same fate as Germany, its warning to every generation is timeless. This week we'll study the lessons it teaches.
This has been Probe with your host, Kirby Anderson. Learn more about what Friedrich Hayek had to say about our current economic practices in Kirby's transcript, The Road to Serfdom, at probe.org/radio. Again, that's probe.org/radio. And join us next time as we help you to think and live biblically here on Probe.
Friedrich Hayek wrote his classic book, The Road to Serfdom, more than 60 years ago, yet people today are still reading it. As they read it and apply its principles, many others misunderstand. So let's look at some of the prevalent misconceptions. Because Hayek was a Nobel-winning economist, people wrongly assume that The Road to Serfdom was merely a book about economics. It is much more. It is about the impact a centrally planned socialist society can have on individuals. Hayek says that one of the main points in his book is that the most important change which extensive government control produces is a psychological change, an alteration in the character of the people. This is necessarily a slow affair, a process which extends not over a few years, but perhaps over one or two generations. The character of citizens has changed because they have yielded their will and decision-making to a totalitarian government. They may have done so willingly in order to have a welfare state, or they may have done so unwillingly because a dictator has taken control of the reins of power. Either way, Hayek argues, their character has been altered because the control over every detail of their life is ultimately control of life itself. In the foreword to his book, Hayek makes his case about the insidious nature of a soft despotism. He quotes from Alexis de Tocqueville's prediction in Democracy in America of a new kind of servitude when, after having thus successively taken each member of the community in its powerful grasp and fashioned him at will, the supreme power then extends its arm over the whole community. It covers the surface of society with a network of small, complicated rules, minute and uniform, through which the most original minds and most energetic characters cannot penetrate to rise above the crowd. The will of man is not shattered, but softened, bent, and guided. Men are seldom forced by it to act, but they are constantly restrained from acting. Such a power does not destroy, but it prevents existence. It stupefies a people till each nation is reduced to be nothing more than a flock of timid and industrious animals of which the government is the shepherd. Hayek believed that individual citizens should develop their own abilities and pursue their own dreams. He argued that government should be a means, a mere instrument, to help individuals in their fullest development in their individual personality. When people read The Road to Serfdom, they often misunderstand its principles and application. Yesterday we began by talking about some of the prevalent misconceptions. Today we'll continue. Another misconception about Hayek is that he was making a case for radical libertarianism. Some of the previous quotes illustrate that he understood that the government could and should intervene in circumstances. He explains that his book was not about whether the government should or should not act in every circumstance. What he was calling for was a government limited in scope and power. On the one hand, he rejected libertarian anarchy. On the other hand, he devoted the book to the reasons why we should reject a pervasive, centrally controlled society advocated by the socialist of his day. He recognized the place for government's role. The government, however, should focus its attention on setting the ground rules for competition rather than devote time and energy to picking winners and losers in the marketplace. And Hayek reasoned that government cannot possibly know the individual and collective needs of society. Therefore, Hayek argues that the state should confine itself to establishing rules applying to general types of situations and should allow the individual's freedom in everything which depends on the circumstances of time and place, because only the individual concerned in each instance can fully know these circumstances and adapt their actions to them. Wise and prudent government must recognize that there are fundamental limitations in human knowledge. A government that recognizes its limitations is less likely to intervene at every level and implement a top-down control of the economy. One last misconception has to do with helping those who suffered misfortune. It is true that he rejected the idea of a top-down, centrally controlled economy and a socialist welfare state, but that did not exclude the concept of some sort of social safety net. In his chapter on security and freedom, he says, "There can be no doubt that some minimum of food, shelter, and clothing, sufficient to preserve health and capacity for work, can be assured to everyone." He notes that this has been achieved in England, and we might add, in most other modern democracies. He went on to argue that the government should provide assistance to victims of acts of God. Although he might disagree with the extent governments today provide ongoing assistance for years, Hayek certainly did believe that there was a place for providing aid for those struck by misfortune. Friedrich Hayek wrote The Road to Serfdom to warn us that sometimes the road can be paved with good intentions. Most government officials and bureaucrats write laws, rules, and regulations with every good intention. They desire to make the world a better place by preventing catastrophe and by encouraging positive actions from their citizens. But in their desire to control and direct every aspect of life, they take us down the road to serfdom. Hayek says the problem comes from a passion for conscious control of everything. People who enter into government and run powerful bureaucracies are often people who enjoy running not only the bureaucracy, but also the lives of its citizens. In making uniform rules from a distance, they deprive the local communities of the freedom to apply their own knowledge and wisdom to their unique situations. Socialist government seeks to be a benevolent god, but usually morphs into a malevolent tyrant. Micromanaging the details of life leads to what Hayek calls imprudence. Most of us would call such rules intrusive, inefficient, and often downright idiotic. But government bureaucrats may actually believe that they are right in making such rules, believing that the local people are too stupid to know what is best for them. Hayek argues that citizens are best served when they're given the freedom to make choices that are best for them and their communities. Hayek actually makes his case for economic freedom using a moral argument. If government assumes our moral responsibility, then we are no longer free moral agents. The intrusion of the state limits my ability to make moral choices. What our generation is in danger of forgetting is not only that morals are of necessity a phenomenon of individual conduct, but also that they can exist only in the sphere in which the individual is free to decide for himself and is called upon to voluntarily sacrifice personal advantage to the observance of a moral rule. That is true whether it is an individual or a government that takes responsibility. In either case, we are no longer making free moral decisions. Someone or something else is making a moral decision for us. A socialist government may promise freedom to its citizens, but it adversely affects them when it frees them from making moral choices. A movement whose main promise is the relief from responsibility cannot be but anti-moral in its effect, however lofty the ideals which it owes its birth. Tomorrow we'll talk about a biblical perspective about this book. How does the road to serfdom compare to biblical principles? Well, we must begin by stating that Friedrich Hayek was not a Christian. He did not confess Christian faith, nor did he attend religious services. Hayek could best be described as an agnostic. Perhaps the most significant connection between Hayek and Christianity can be found in their common understanding of human nature. Hayek started with a simple premise: human beings are limited in their understanding. The Bible would say that we are fallen creatures living in a fallen world. Starting with this assumption that human beings are not God, he constructed a case for liberty and limited government. This was in contrast to the prevailing socialist view that human beings possess superior knowledge and could wisely order the affairs of its citizens through central planning. Hayek rejected the idea that central planners would have enough knowledge to organize the economy and instead showed that there is spontaneous ordering of an economic system, and that would be the mechanism that would push forward progress in society. Hayek essentially held to a high view and a low view of human nature, or we could call it a balanced view of human nature. He recognized that human beings did have a noble side influenced by rationality, compassion, and even altruism, but he also understood that human beings are also limited in their perception of the world and subject to character flaws. Such a view comports with a biblical perspective of human nature. First, there is the noble aspect to human beings. We are created in the image of God, Genesis 1, and we are made a little lower than the angels, Psalm 8. Second, there is a flaw in human beings. The Bible teaches that all are sinful, Romans 3, and that the heart of man is deceitful among all things, Jeremiah 17. Hayek believed that man learns by the disappointment of expectations. In other words, we learn that we are limited in our capacities. We do not have God's understanding of the world and thus cannot effectively control the world like socialists confidently believe that we can. We are not the center of the universe. We're not gods. As Christians, we agree with the concept of the disappointment of expectations because we are fallen and live in a world that groans in travail, Romans 8. Although Hayek was not a Christian, many of the ideas in The Road to Serfdom connect with biblical principles. Christians would be wise to read it and learn from him the lessons of history.